uncensored, no holds barred talk. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. This is the Global Reality Radio Network.
September 19th, 2011 marks 4 years of broadcasting for the Global Reality Show. In that time, we've exposed many important and invaluable pieces of information concerning the global power structure, hidden and occult text, ancient archaeology, secret societies, ETs, the priest class, and so much more. With no outside funding, sponsors, or advertisement, this places all the well-being of our work and research into the hands of people like you. In order to continue our work and to make it bigger and better, the Global Reality is having a 4-year anniversary fundraiser to take our quest of information critical mass to a new and before unseen level. Unfortunately, technology becomes aged and not much is left after paying operating costs each month. This is a very critical time to reach people, and with your financial support, we can redouble our efforts. Please visit www.theglobalreality.com today and make a safe and secure donation using our chip-in banner or PayPal donate button at the site. Why give your support to a phony political stooge when you can support real underground media by the people? I'm Josh Reeves, and this is the Global Reality Radio Network.
Welcome to another live edition of the Global Reality right here on the Global Reality Radio Network. I'm your host, Josh Reeves. Thanks for being with us here tonight for another late night Moonbat edition of the broadcast. It is Wednesday, September 14th into Thursday, September the 15th, 2011, live for you here on this late night Moonbat edition of the broadcast. Not a lot of news, not another big news day, another day where I pretty much the same thing as yesterday. As I said, the start of yesterday's show would apply today as well. I was on the air where I was even going to do a show tonight either. Then I decided to come on, and here I am. So we'll get into a couple of news stories. I think I have maybe one or two, just a few. We'll get into those. We'll also get into some emails. And we'll also continue reading from the Lost Book of Enki. Now, we've got an email tonight that pertains to this. I think the browser probably restarted again, so I probably lost the page. But got a good email here tonight concerning this Lost Book of Enki that I'll read, because these are very interesting things that I've found through my verifying a lot of this Sumerian text information and looking into it and studying the history of it and studying when it was published and what was going on at the time when it was published, how that relates to the various things that were stolen from the Iraq National Museum during the invasion in 2003, which 9/11 was undoubtedly a pretext for. That to me is one of the bigger things, if not the biggest thing now that I really look at it, that always gets left out of the 9/11 discussion because nobody wants to go there. The fact that everything that's happened since 9/11 has been a byproduct of the fact that they had to get into Iraq to get these ancient artifacts pertaining to the Akkadian, Assyrian, Sumerian, Babylonian civilizations. because a lot of this stuff that Lost Book of Enki is based on is various different tablets and different things that were taken and translated, and it was first published in 2001. Doesn't that seem odd to anybody else? Well, this stuff was published in 2001. Boom, 9/11 happens, and then by 2003, they're telling us, no, we're not going to go after bin Laden. We're going to go after Saddam Hussein because he might have weapons of mass destruction. You didn't tell us Saddam Hussein attacked us on 9/11. You told us it was bin Laden. And then they, again, for, I mean, it's documented fact. It is not a conspiracy theory. The first, very first thing they did when they went into Iraq was they went straight to the museum and they went past all of the decoys and all the things they'd set out and went straight to the vault. I mean, there's footage. There's BBC footage of it live. I've seen it. Where they show the fucking, you can see the, these guys' faces, man. Special forces. They go and blow the doors off. I think that there's, and some of the phrase that I coined about 10 years ago that I've said oftentimes here on the show is they fictionalize the truth so the truth seems like fiction. And if, and I'll answer all of this again, but my point is that if indeed, as many people have speculated, Zachariah Sitchin is was an agent for the Central Intelligence Agency or some other intelligence outfit, Mossad or anything else, then it most certainly would have been under the guise of that right there, of the guise of putting this stuff out. You know, this stuff like Lost Book of Enki, it's people get confused because it's classified in the bookstore and put under fiction. So people create this meme, oh, well, Zachariah Sitchin just made up a lot of this stuff, and oh, he just... And then people accept that, it takes the fiction realm, and then meanwhile, all the while, when Zachariah Sitchin was alive, he didn't seem to have a problem with that. He lived, did quite well for himself, made millions of dollars, had his books in all the bookstores, speaking tours all the way up to the end of his life. But, see what he did there? He quietly allowed them to pigeonhole him any way they wanted to, meanwhile, taking the big cut and saying and just going along with, oh, yeah, this is fictionalized or anything else. But now I might as well get into this now because now I'm starting to answer all the things that were in this email. The fact of the matter is those texts exist. I've actually gone through some of the, you know, the scholarly... well-written, you know, official line story stuff of ancient Sumeria. And what's interesting is if you go through some of these different writings, the, you know, the official scholarly, you know, translations, the non-Zachariah Sitchin translations like the Epic of Gilgamesh, which I own a hard copy of. One that had something to do with Ishtar, Descent of Ishtar, The Lament of Ur. You can go and find all the scholarly, you know, official accepted translations of those things. You can go and find those and you can do A-B comparisons with the Sitchin works. And they're almost verbatim. So you see that's the capacity to which Zachariah Sitchin was the gatekeeper, is because he allowed his work, even though he believed it to be true, to be categorized as fiction and thus seen as fiction to the whole of the world. And meanwhile, anybody who says it's not, we can just call them a conspiracy theorist. Meanwhile, right after this book comes out, boom, we have 9/11 and the perfect pretext to be able to go and get all of these texts. That's what they've been going there for, folks, is ancient technology. Like I talked about earlier in the week, I believe that's what they're looking for now. That, you know, the, what they talk about in the text, the bridge or the gate between heaven and earth, that the bright shining thing buried under the ground, powers, basically talking about the Ark of the Covenant and some wormhole or stargate powered technology. All of a sudden, we're all obsessed with the moon. Huh? We got to go to the moon. Talks about how, you know, The Anunnaki were up there on the moon. They took that thing with them at some point up there. Mars, they talk about Mars being a way station. And from what I gather from reading the Lost Book of Enki here on the show, it seemed to me that when they called it, because they literally called Mars a way station, in between point. So it seems that Mars, where Mars is positioned in our solar system, it's the exact middle point between Nibiru and Earth. And it seems that these stargates in this Ark of the Covenant, because they're housed in a seemingly small box or container, it uses a great deal of energy to open itself, and then it takes a very great amount of energy for it to transfer. So it seems like it has a limited range. So it almost seems that Mars is like the way station, that they can jump from Earth to Mars, and then from Mars they can jump to Nibiru. Now that's interesting, because there's been a lot of people, was it Laura Eisenhower? I don't remember what her name was. There were people who have said that the elite already have that, and they're using that now. They're jumping between Earth and Mars all the time. I mean, that's, people have talked about that. Look at the fact that you had, my God, going back to Bush Sr. Bush Sr., when he was in office, I've seen clips of it, man. When Bush Sr. was in office, his big initiative while he was in office was the Mars program, get to Mars. And I believe that's why they're trying to go to the moon and to Mars, is to access this ancient alien technology that's been left there by the Anunnaki. And that's why the race is on. I mean, the big news today I've seen all over the news wires was NASA unveils its behemoth rockets that will now take us to Mars. I mean, NASA has mothballed all their other programs. They've not mothballed the old space shuttle, all other space programs. Where are they putting all their money right now? Space-based weapons, Mars, and the moon. So we had Poppy Bush. I mean, he was all about trying to get that going. Clinton comes in. Clinton has several campaigns to get things going, starts talking about a Mars mission. What happens? Boom. W comes in. Just weeks after the inauguration of his second term, George W. Bush, in his first public address since the inauguration that year, addressed NASA and pledged that NASA was going to continue its mission to Mars. Now, interestingly enough, again, you know, because this is coming from the standpoint that people that say, you know, everything, the Zachariah Sitchin stuff is fiction, so that means he made it up. So that discounts everything that's in the Sumerian text, and I think that's wrong. You can't throw the baby out with the bathwater here. Just because he's a clown, it doesn't make the information relevant. I mean, on Mars, where these Anunnaki allegedly were, you had the face. They talked about carving the face out as a reminder of their brethren who had died there and had the half face of a man, half face of a lion. We also had the fact that they set up this in this area on Mars, on the way station, in an area known as Cydonia, where the pyramids on Mars just happen to be located, as well as the face, smack dab on the 33rd degree parallel of Mars. Fast forward to Earth, we have ancient Mesopotamia, which was at that time known as, you guessed it, Cydonia. You guessed it as well. It's also located on the 33rd degree parallel. And this happens to be where they build, you know, the Ziggurats at Ur and all of these other, you know, the Temple of Babylon, all this stuff. So, I mean, it looks to me that that's exactly what's going on here. Is there's been this campaign going on to associate all this stuff with fiction. So these guys in secret can go in there and tell, oh, no, it's fiction, but yet we're going to allocate all these resources to go over to the Middle East and get antiquities. Look, I've talked to guys who have been in over there, man. I've talked to guys that have been in the service and have been over there to Iraq and Afghanistan and all those places. And I've talked to many of them, people, you know, just guys, you run into people and people telling stories, or you just talk to somebody, you know. I've heard so many guys talking about antiquities and how they, you know, sometimes they feel like they're fucking archaeologists, not soldiers. Because that's really what they're doing over there, folks. It's a fact. It's not my opinion. It's not a conspiracy theory. The whole war is about genocide and about stealing what was set up in those early kingdoms when the gods lived on earth. Because now that we have a context for this technology, we now have a context where this stuff means, and it's beyond what these people can look at. Need more proof of this? I tell you what, I dare you to go look up. There was a video, I'm trying to find it, and I'll put a link to it in the chat room. There was a, back in the 90s, there was a TV show, I think it was Discovery Channel or something like that. And they had sent in this robot. Why is that not working? Into the Great Pyramid. And they sent it all the way down this shaft in the Great Pyramid because they were going to see what was in there for the first time. And the door, what they ended up finding was this door. And this door was considered a sacred place, and it was the shafts leading up to it were only 3 feet in diameter. How a person would have ever gotten up there, you find it hard to believe. But what is in there? And the name of the video is Great Pyramid, a Strange Sacred Door at the Top Half of the Queen's Chamber. It's on YouTube. It's startling. Right there inside of the this robot, you can clearly see that on the wall in this chamber, there's the face of a lion. There's the face of a man standing there. This is essentially, in my mind, incontrovertible proof of the things that are talked about in these ancient Sumerian texts. I mean, it's still hidden. This is why they've kept so much of this hidden from us, of what's in these pyramids and what they're actually for. But let's, I want to read the email that I was talking about. It's a good email. Let me find it here. Let's see. Oh, here it is. It's from Paul. He says, "Hey, Josh. Thanks for all that you do. I've been enjoying your work and sending you long-distance love from the north." I appreciate that. Thank you so much. "I enjoyed the video interview on YouTube you did recently with the Demigods. I loved y'all's piece, The 33rd Degree. I'm a musician, too, and I sympathize with y'all's experience trying to build an audience and compose music. It's not easy, not at all. For me, I just have trouble finding the inspiration and confidence to compose and write material lots of times. Inspiration can be a hard thing to come by for an artist anyway. I hope y'all find lots of inspiration and support for your music." Well, thank you. "I have been thoroughly enjoying your reading of Sitchin's The Lost Book of Enki. I've also read a few of Sitchin's books, and I enjoy them. And I also read on the back cover that The Lost Book of Enki was partially created, perhaps substantially created, by Sitchin because the tablets are broken and incomplete. And also, on my hard copy of The Lost Book of Enki, on the back cover, it says it's categorized as fiction and mythology." Yes, that's true. But it doesn't insinuate on the back cover that he created this work. He created he did create it out of multiple tablets and years and years and years worth of research. But I have the back cover right here. I'd like to read it. it says, "Will the past become our future? Is humankind destined to repeat the events that occurred on another planet? Far away from Earth, Zachariah Sitchin's best-selling series, The Earth Chronicles, provide a humanity side of the story, as recorded on ancient clay tablets and other Sumerian artifacts concerning our origins at the hands of the Anunnaki, those who from heaven to Earth came. In The Lost Book of Enki, we can view this saga from a different perspective through this richly conceived autobiographical account of Lord Enki." Autobiographical means it's coming from the perspective of that person, not doesn't say fictional autobiographical account. "An Anunnaki god who tells the story of these extraterrestrials' arrival on Earth from the 12th planet Nibiru, the object of their colonization, gold to replenish the dying atmosphere of their home planet. Finding this precious metal results in the Anunnaki creation of Homo sapiens, the human race, to mine this important source. In his previous work, Sitchin compiled the complete story of the Anunnaki's impact on human civilization in peacetime and in war, from the fragments scattered throughout Sumerian, Akkadian, Babylonian, Assyrian, Hittite, Egyptian, Canaanite, and Hebrew sources. The myths of all ancient people in the Old World, as well as the New, missing from these accounts, however, was the perspective of the Anunnaki themselves. What was life like on their own planet? What motives propelled them to settle on Earth? And what drove them from their new home? Convinced of the existence of a now lost book that formed this basis of ancient Sumerian text, holding the answers to these questions, the author began his search for evidence. Through exhaustive research from primary sources, he has recreated tales as the memoirs of Enki, the leader of these first astronauts. So what he's saying there is that he's gone through these different tablets, and from the different stuff that he's compiled this into one thing from a bunch of different tablets. But people have taken that and construed that as he made it up, and it's a work of fiction because it's classified in a bookstore, or in, because it can't technically be classified as religion or history or anything else, because it has things that by nature in it, to most people's perspective, have to be considered fiction. So that's true, but it's also true that if they just label it as fiction, no one will ever take it seriously. No one will ever think that there's anything to it. Not even ever accept anything even as being even remotely possible. And that's what I'm saying. That's my point. I think Zachariah Sitchin was complicit in that. That was their operation. That was what they did, and he was complicit in that. Does that make him a liar? Well, not necessarily. It just means that they found a clever way to get him to play ball without really, being 100% completely dishonest about the information. Yes, he was dishonest because you think that he would have made the millions of dollars he made off these books and had New York Times bestsellers if he wasn't towing the official line somewhere? Oh, come on. No way in hell, man. So in exchange for having all his translations of actual texts that exist, that's what's ridiculous about it. You know, his translations of texts that actually exist, which in many cases almost word for word match the official scholarly translations, and thereby making people believe that these texts actually don't exist, and thereby getting people to absolutely not believe that we would ever go and invade a country or launch airplanes into buildings on our own goddamn turf in our own country as a pretext to go and get these ancient texts. Because that way, people wouldn't get that far. People just assume they don't exist anyway. So, you know, you tell them that that's what the United States government and all this war is about, they're not going to listen to you anyway. I mean, you can sit there with a fucking portable DVD player and shove it in their face and say, look, here it is. I got it. You want to see it? You want to see them going into the Iraq National Museum? You want to see them taking these antiquities? We have footage of it. I'll show you. They still don't care. And I think that puts that to rest as far as I'm concerned. On the back cover, it talks about Stitchin's research of primary sources and using actual discovered portions of the ancient text as scaffolding. He has here recreated the memoirs of Enki. Yeah, he had to take all these different pieces and put them together into one thing. And basically, based on the texts available that he translated, he created a timeline out of them. They weren't in a timeline. There was just a bunch of fucking... These things, dude, you understand that the army, when they were setting up base camp, when they first got into Iraq, they set up their base camp on the ruins of, you know, the ancient city of Babylon. There was news stories where they said that tractor trailers and caterpillars and stuff that were coming in there and doing construction, setting up their base camp, literally were digging into the dirt, which should have been marked off as an archaeological area. They admitted in the newspapers, ladies and gentlemen, that they literally ground up into pieces in the ground our military ancient Sumerian cylinder seals and texts, which just happened to be where they set up base camp when they first got in Iraq. That is a fact. That is a fact. Now contend with that. You know, you can throw stitching out with the fucking bathwater. As far as I'm concerned, it doesn't matter. That is an irrefutable fact. If there was nothing to all this stuff, why did the United States military stage 9/11, tell us this lie about Osama and Saddam Hussein, and put everything in the goddamn power they had throughout the world to convince them that invasion was correct? Only to go over there and grind all... I mean, they're covering tracks, man. They're there to make sure this shit never gets out. Because as I've said many times, if the whole of the world came into this information and realized it was the truth, it would be over for these motherfuckers by morning. So they fictionalize the truth, so the truth seems like fiction, and they just go along with a plan. Well, not anymore. So thanks, Paul. I hope I answered your questions there on Lost Book Inc. We'll be getting back into reading that tonight. Email here from Sarah. She says, the Nart sagas, which are the heroic epics of the North Caucasian peoples, have their origination in the late Bronze Age and the early Iron Age. The distinguishing features of these epics are the fact that they are mostly about giants. Yeah, that's might be it. The Nart sagas. I'll have to look at that. I'll have to look that up. That might be something to read here. Various metalworking knowledges spread to the ancient Caucasians from the Near East throughout, although they kept more advanced than the inhabitants of northern Eurasia in these areas. Well, Sarah is who's a super duper listener and a great person who she's sent me a lot of emails through the years. We've talked and stuff. I believe Sarah, if I'm correct, Sarah is an archaeologist herself, and I think she's studying these the Caucasians mountains region. Well, that's what Sarah. That's what the ancient Sumerian texts talk about. They say that the ones that the demigods, the ones that the Anunnaki put in power, in positions of kingship and power, that were the originators of the bloodlines. Those were the ones that they had crossbred with these Caucasian people, with these white-skinned people that lived in the Caucasus Mountains region, or the Caucasus Mountain region, whatever you want to say it. Yeah. So, interesting study there. Thanks for the info on that one, Sarah. Here's one from Dave. He says, Josh, I've been listening to your show for the past couple of weeks, and the other night you mentioned having missed an article about the meeting of the CMP. You can subscribe to a news feed with the Council for National Policy as one of the search items, and you shouldn't miss these stories. Well, yeah, I understand that, Dave, but like I said, and I do have that, but at the time those articles came out was the day before and the day of when my dad died. So, Nibiru could have been in the fucking backyard at that minute, and it wouldn't have mattered because it's kind of a big deal. For me, that just blows my mind still. It blows my mind, the insensitive fucks out there that I had to deal with around that time. People started attacking me. I don't know what it is, man. There's an epidemic of people who I've tried to help or tried to work with or try to be friends with online and in the chat room and stuff, and have encouraged them to start their own shows. And every time they do, man, every time they start their own platform, they come back and start attacking me and making shit up out of the clear blue sky about me, lies, pure unadulterated lies that they propagate as the truth, and then try to run this like blackmail thing on me. Let me do a show on your network and I won't make shit up about you and defame your name. But if you don't, I'm going to make shit up about you and defame your name. Literally, I've had like 6 or 7 people do that kind of shit to me. They start, it's like they think because I encourage them that after they actually do their own thing, that at that point I'm supposed to, help promote them or help bring them on board with what I'm doing. And I hate to have to tell you, it's not like that. It's never going to be like that. No matter what you do, that's just not my style. It's not what I'm doing here. And I apologize for that, but that's just the way it is. And, I've tried to help people out so many times. And I've had other people who I would have helped out, but, inadvertently shot themselves in the foot because they just get pushy or they get, you know, I mean, it, you know, I had one person get mad because I wouldn't put a banner on my website for their specific cause or something. And I said, you know, well, I don't put banners up there for anything. I don't have, you know, if I was going to have banner ads up there, I'd have banner ads up there for, you know, and sell Jew Gold and dick pills and water filters and this stuff, make some Skrilla. But I like to keep, that's my principle here, is keeping no commercials, support from the audience only, having no banner ads up there, support from the audience only, and having that model and trying to set the standard for changing what this stuff is supposed to be about, which is the info itself. Not Josh Reeves and, you know, oh, he's a bad guy and he's this, that, and the other, and or whatever they want to make up about me because I won't help promote them. You know, sad fact of the matter is that when you got to be prepared for what you're going to be encountering when you enter yourself in this arena. When you enter yourself in this arena, I hate to have to tell you, it's cutthroat as fuck. There's no buddies and pals and everybody, you know, it's not like that at all, man. It's just not. Everybody's out for themselves. Everybody's out for their own thing. And you get to the point where you realize if you're not that way with what you're trying to do, then people are just going to run all over you and not respect you, and you're never going to get anywhere with what you're doing. I played that ball game, man, for over 2 years. I played the ball game of being a team player and being on radio networks, and it never got me anywhere but a fucking stick in the eye. I tried to work with all kinds of people that would stab me in the back left and right because they were just out of sheer jealousy. And it's like everybody, I mean, I'm just me. This show is me, and it's my extension of my research, and that's it. I'm not trying to, you know, I'm not trying to have a you know, We Are Change 2.0, you know, the anti-CMP version over here or something. That's not me. I'm not trying to be a leader. I'm not trying to be a titular head of anything. It's not an ego thing at all. It is simply me and my statement and my thing and what I'm doing. And that way it's not construed as a group or a following or anything else. It's just, hey, you like it, you don't. You want to support what I do or you don't. You feel you get something out of it, it's valuable, or you don't. At the end of the day, that's it. And so, I mean, you know, unless the whole thing is, it just bothers me that people would think that I owe them something. You know, you didn't thank me enough because I booked this guest for you, or you didn't, you know, even though a lot of people I've thanked many, many times over and over for contributions they've made. But, you know, when you volunteer to do something and say, hey, I'd like to do, you know, book guests for you, or I'd like to, you know, I don't know what you expect from me. I don't have anything to give other than my thanks and my appreciation. I appreciate everything Manhydra does on the website and keeping the stuff up there. I tell him every day how much I appreciate what he does. But he knows I appreciate what he does. He offered to do it for me. And again, I haven't had any problems. I don't doubt we ever will. It's just, you know, it's like he decided that was something he could do to chip in to help out the cause. And he did. I don't know how I'm supposed to owe anybody anything more than that, just because, you know, I appreciate everything everybody has ever done out there for me as far as promoting my show or making a donation. I go out of my way every day to tell people how much I appreciate them on this show. You all know that everything I do is because of you out there and you guys that support me. But it's kind of, you know, it kind of is one of those what have you done for me lately things, you know? Because that's how this stuff is. You know, if I don't do a show for a couple of days or a week because my dad is dying and then dies, and we don't get any support in here. We get no cash to operate. And that happened. I thought people would have supported me and helped me, you know, made some bigger donations to help me get through the tough times with my dad. No, it didn't. It was tough during that time. almost no money because I wasn't live, because I couldn't even get in the headspace of doing shows because I'm watching my father die in one of the most horrific fucking ways you'd ever want to see somebody die. And that was the week when people chose to start attacking me. And they want to turn back around on me and say,
oh, you're trying to be your friend, but you don't want to be nobody's friend.
I don't consider somebody that to be my friend, somebody who chooses the time in which my dad is passing away to attack me. And then want to come back and say, why won't you be my friend? Know this. I didn't get into this to make friends. I got into this to do the job at hand, which is to present the info that I'm finding in my own research, in my own hunt, the best I can, put it out there for everybody, and hope that you get something out of it that will continue your own research. That's it. Past that, I can't do anything else. I can't be worrying about, you know, if you volunteer to you know, book guests for me, or you volunteer to, you know, promote my show or run my website. I can't be bothered with having to worry about if I thanked you enough that week or, we all should tell everybody we appreciate them more. We all should appreciate everything more than we do. Welcome to the fucking club, Jack. It's a fact of life. None of us appreciate what we have most of the time. I try my goddamnedest to always be appreciative of everything I have, and I am. But what you want to, you know, what you want me to do for you, I mean, when you choose to throw yourself in this arena, it's tough. The problem is so many people think that they, when they start doing this, that when they start doing this and just for, you know, a few months, they'll be the next Alex Jones and they'll live in a $1 million mansion and have a servant's quarters and, you know, live in nanny and all that stuff. And it's just fact of life. There's just no money in this. And I am thankful that I've been doing this long enough and have enough credibility and a reputation to where I have people that are willing to support what I do every month. And a lot of people are jealous of that. But I worked my ass off for years and years and years, man, before I was on radio to get to the point where I'm at now. People forget that. I worked at Pizza Hut as a cook, did not take a managerial position offered to me, stayed at a cook level at Pizza Hut for 4 years, from 2005 until 2009, just so I could be where I'm at right now doing this. I've made sacrifices for almost the past 10 years to do this, folks. Didn't spend enough time with my dad in his last days because I was doing this. You can think whatever you want to think about me, but don't you ever for a goddamn minute think that I don't work my ass off for this, because I do. You think I like being considered weird and the weird one, but just because I choose to sack up and have the cojones to talk about this stuff in a public arena and put it out there? You don't think I know everything there is to know about how tough the side effects are of putting yourself in the arena and doing this? Man, I could preach you a novel on it. But I don't get up here every day and spend the bulk of my time bitching and moaning about that, because you know what? I knew that was how it was going to be when I started doing this. I knew there was going to be flack coming from all sides. And it's funny how this happened right before I was releasing the Secret Right Volume 1. And now that I'm getting ready to release Secret Right Volume 2 and they know I'm close, the haters and the feds and the spooks and the COINTEL and everything else are coming out of the woodworks once again. But to the people out there that know me and know what I'm all about, that doesn't faze them. But the fact of the matter is, I've gotten a lot of attention on this show since the Red Ice interview. And as you start to get more attention, they have to naturally bring out more haters. I mean, one of our great listeners and supporters last night in the chat room, Cy Girl, you know, she was saying that the Lee Rogers chat room is just, it's just full of people over and over just making stuff up about me just to an obsessive level. And I don't know real people that would do that. I mean, it's obvious they're either bots or COINTEL or paid informants. I mean, really, in this economy, people really have time to spend 10 or 12 hours in a chat room just spewing nonsense and bullshit that's made up out of the clear blue sky about me? Wow. Well, I tell you what, then, I'm proud of what we've done here, then. I am already proud of what we've done here, but so far, but even more, because, you know, if they're having to expend that kind of expenditures just to try and defame me, my God, no wonder. That explains all this shit. But, I just don't know what to tell some of these people, man. I don't know what they think I can do for them. I mean, I'm barely even surviving over here myself. But the reason that I do survive and get by is because I have to constantly work at this. I can't just take time off from it. You know, it's got to be a 24/7 thing for me. And the benefit that has given me over the past couple of years since I've been doing that, since I've been able to dedicate majority of my time to this, the understanding and how much I've grown in that time, it's been exponential. I wouldn't trade it for anything. Because, you know, having the time to dedicate all of my time to doing this and doing, making the movies and working on research for that, and playing in the Demigods band. I mean, it's, you know, it's all going towards that. Let me see what other emails we have here tonight. I don't think we have very many. Let's see what else there is. I swear there was one that I was reading and I missed it. Oh, I meant to finish Dave's email. He says, you can subscribe to a newsfeed on the Council for National Policy is one of the search terms, so you shouldn't miss those items. That's what I was explaining. And I know there are a whole bunch of these shady roundtable groups, but to my knowledge, yours is the first show to even mention the CMP that I've listened to lately. Big thanks to Peter Del Scott for turning you on to them and for you picking up the ball and running with it. Keep up the good work, Dave. Thanks, Dave. I appreciate that. Yeah, there are too many shows that talk about it, and, you know, it's very clear why, because either the networks that these shows are on or the hosts themselves are generally connected to somebody who's been affiliated with a group. The entire truth movement, Patriot movement, was set up by these guys, man. It's just, there's just no question. Again, this is our 4-year anniversary of the Global Reality. People have been asking, somebody wanted me to have Lee Rogers on the show. We may or may not be doing guests. I'm gonna have to just see what happens. We haven't had a lot of interest. We only had like 2 people sending emails, you know, suggesting guests. So I really haven't had a lot of anything going on that yet. We haven't had a lot of support in our chipping banner for our 4-year anniversary fundraiser either. So all that stuff's kind of up in the air because the support for this stuff has just kind of been lax. But I'll keep you posted and let you know what's happening. But yeah, my website where this broadcast originates from, www.theglobalreality.com. The chipping banner is there for the 4-year anniversary fundraiser. Donate button if you want to put in a larger amount. Also, the P.O. box we have if you can't use PayPal. Please support our work. We need your donations this week, big time. So please support us if you can. Not a lot of news stories here tonight. God, I don't even know if there's any. Really, none of these are even worth covering. We talked about last night about the CMP meeting that's coming up at the end of the month. Man, I really wish I had the cash to get out there and go cover that for the film. I'd do it. But if we have anybody listening out in San Francisco area, California area, that can get out there and cover that for us, get some footage and pictures too, comes and goes out of that thing, that'd be great. Magical info fairy wants to drop $2,000 in my lap, I'll go do it. Be about the only way. There's not really anything of note here to cover tonight. I had a few cursory stories, but none of this stuff's really important if you ask me. Let's go to the, John, do you remember what page we were on last night? Because I lost my page because my browser restarted. John always in chat room always helps me. I think we're at the top of tablet 14, were we? We just read the synopsis last night, so we're about to start the 14th tablet, I think, right now, but I just don't know what page that's on. 314, that's it. Thank you, John. We're about through this motherfucker. We're about all the way through it. All right. Synopsis of the 14th tablet. We read this last night, but I'd like to read it for you again right now. Synopsis of the 14th tablet. Bibili, Marduk's chosen sinner, survives the calamity. Enki sees it as an omen of Marduk's inevitable supremacy. And Lil ponders the past, fate, and destiny. And accepts Marduk's supremacy and retreats to faraway lands. The brothers bid a sentimental goodbye, and Enki sees the past as a guide for telling the future. He decides to commit all as a record for posterity, colophoned by the scribe Indubsar. So the 14th tablet, 314. We're going to get into that. So now if you've got emails you'd like to send in tonight, I'd love to get into more here for you. GlobalRealityShow@gmail.com. That's GlobalRealityShow@gmail.com. That's where you send that in. And be happy to read that for you here. Or anytime, you can send it over there. GlobalRealityShow@gmail.com. We are going to take a break. Come back. Get into the 14th tablet of the Lost Book of Enki for you here tonight on the show. My name is Josh Reeves. This is the Global Reality for you right here on the Global Reality Radio Network. Stay with us. Back here with you on the Global Reality, right here on the Global Reality Radio Network. I'm your host, Josh Reeves. Thanks for being with us here tonight for another late night Moonbat edition of the broadcast. My website where this broadcast originates from is www.theglobalreality.com. That's www.theglobalreality.com. Thanks to everybody out there for continuing to tune into the broadcast. And those that have donated and supported us, thank you so much to everybody out there. Can't thank you guys enough for continuing to help us push forward and help us. You know, I think that's what upsets me the most when I hear people that just, you know, run around and make assumptions and make up stuff about me the most is that, you know, it makes me focus on, like, you know, they makes me focus on negative things when I shouldn't be focusing on negative things. I should be focusing on, because it, you know, tries that a lot of people try to do that. They try to get me mad. They try to shake me up, get in my headspace. They want to see me blow up, and a lot of people try to goad me into fights and shit all the time. And after they're trying to get a reaction out of me, and I have to, you know, when I see that people, I have no problem with the confrontation. I have a confrontation with you and no problem. But, if I see you're trying to goad me into a fight, I won't even go there. Because again, man, I just have a hard time, giving two shits of a motherfuck about anything that doesn't have to do with the information. That's why we're all here. That's why we all should be here. That's the topic at hand. That's the subject at hand. It's the information. But because everybody is so obsessed with drama and bullshit and soap opera crap, they have to try and make something out of nothing for people that, like me, who, you know, do this kind of stuff. This is my life, man. This, I live, eat, sleep, and breathe this stuff. You think I would do this, the hours that I do this, and not sleep and stay up all night working on movies and researching? You think I would do this with no paycheck at the end of the week if I didn't love it? I logged almost 60 hours last week working on the film and doing radio. And at the end of the week, when most people's weekend is comes and they get their paycheck and they get to, you know, have a few days off, guess what? Not that, that wasn't there for me. I have $20 in the bank. You know, so you can say what you want about me, but again, I work my ass off for this. And so that's why I think that, you know, with the amount of listeners that we have now, the amount of emails I get and feel on a regular basis, that if those were equal, our support was equal to that, we would be doing okay. I'm not a salesman, and I'm not definitely not going to get up here and try to sell you anything. I hate having to get up here and actually ask for donations anyway. I wish we could just never have to say anything, and we would always have enough money to operate and wouldn't have to worry about it. And I'd never get up here, have to get up here and say it again. I'd love if that was the case. But unfortunately, that's not the case, and that's not the reality, so that's what I have to do. Because if I don't state to people, make it very emphatic, like I'm doing now, that, you know, we need your support for this, because all this stuff costs money, unfortunately, then, you know, we don't get the support that we need. So, I'm going to continue to do what I need to do to be able to continue my work, and that's just all there is to it. If that means in the end I have to end up selling advertising or doing all that stuff, then so be it, I will. I hope that you will respond out there, you the listeners, and keep that from happening. But, you know, point of the matter is, I'm going to keep trucking forward. So let's get into the Lost Book of Enki tonight. The 14th tablet. Babili, where Marduk declared supremacy, it was spared by the evil wind. All the land south of Babili, the evil wind devoured. The heart of the second region it also touched. When, in the aftermath of the great calamity, Enlil and Enki surveyed the havoc and met. Enki considered to Enlil the sparing of Babili as a divine omen. That Marduk has been destined to supremacy by the sparing of Babili is also confirmed. So did Enki say to Enlil. The will of the creator of all it must have been, Enlil said to Enki. Then to him, the dream vision and the prophecy of Galzu, Enlil revealed. If that by you was known, why did you not prevent the use of the weapons of terror? Enki asked him. My brother, Enlil, to Enki with a sorrowed voice said, enough seen was the reason. But after your coming to Earth, the mission was obstructed by an obstacle, a way to circumvent the obstruction we have found. Of that, the fashioning of the Earthlings was the greatest solution. Also, the fountain of a myriad unwanted twists and turns it was. When you have fathomed the celestial cycles and assigned the constellations, who in them could foresee the hands of destiny? Who could between our chosen fates and our unbending destiny distinguish? Who proclaims false omens? Who could pronounce these true prophecies? Therefore, to keep myself to myself, the words of Galzu, I decided. Was he truly the creator of all's emissary? Was he my hallucination? Let whatever has to happen, happen, so to myself I said. Enki listened to his brother's words. He held his head up and down and he nodded. The first region is desolate. The second region is in confusion. The third region is wounded. The place of the celestial chariots is no more. This is what has happened, Enki said to Enlil. If that was the will of the creator of all, that is what has remained of what our mission to Earth. By the ambitions of Marduk, the seed was sown. What the crop has resulted is for him to reap. So he's saying, you know, Marduk, Ra, who was also, you know, Enki, Quetzalcoatl, also possibly Jesus, many people have said. He's saying that, you know, this was his ambitions that caused all this, so he's the one that has to deal with all this. Is that possibly where, you know, oh, Jesus having the weight of man on his shoulders and all this stuff, is that possibly where that comes from? He died for our sins, blah, blah, blah. Is that where that comes from? So did Enlil say to his brother Enki that he accepted the triumph of Marduk. Let the rank of 50 by me intended for Ninurta be given to Marduk instead. Let Marduk have supremacy over the desolation in the regions of his supremacy, he declared. As for me and Ninurta, we will in his way stand no longer. To the lands beyond the oceans we will depart for what we had all come for. The mission to obtain for Nibiru the gold we will complete. So Enlil did say to Enki with dejection in his words. Would matters have been different were the weapons of terror not used? Enki challenged his brother. Should we had not heeded the words of Galzu and returned to Nibiru, Enlil retorted. Should the Earth mission have been stopped when the Anunnaki mutinied? I did what I did, and you did what you did. The past cannot be undone. Is not in that, too, a lesson? Enki asked them both. Is not what on Earth happened what mirror what had taken place on Nibiru? Is not in that tale of the past the outline of the future written? Will mankind in our image created repeat our attainments and our failures? Enlil was silent as he stood up to leave. Now see, that's it. That's what I've been hinting at this whole entire time. Is that the point of this information is that we don't go and fuck up our planet the way they fucked theirs up by allowing all these things to happen, yet we are, because this information is being presented to us as fiction and not fact. specifically in the West. In other parts of the world, I don't know, maybe it's more accepted. But here in the United States, they are selling this and marketing to this as utter fiction and science fiction to us and totally made up. And not in any way, in shape, or form, in any way that any of this might possibly be true. And even go so far as to not even alert people that these Sumerian texts are real. And according to an article that DJ had put in the chat room earlier, 140,000 archives have gone, 140,000 pieces of antiquities from these ancient Anunnaki Sumerian civilizations, 140,000 ancient relics officially recorded as having been stolen or destroyed since the U.S. invasion in spring of 2003. You're honestly going to tell me that all that's just coincidence and none of that, this stuff really means anything? It's just made up hubbub by Zachariah Sitchin and none of these antiquities hold any of this stuff? Well, I got news for you. Of those 140,000 antiquities, most of those are cylinder seals, clay tablets. I mean, we need to know this information so we don't repeat what they have done on their planet and here on Earth. And we are repeating that. We are going to repeat it again. Why? Why? Because we're too goddamn lazy and too goddamn stupid to think for ourselves. We're going to let the priest class and religion and government dictate to us what we think and what we believe because we're afraid of what other people are going to think about us. I hate to have to admit that that might be a possible outcome for us, but goddamn it looks like it might be. But I'm going to do my goddamnedest to make sure it's not that way. You understand? Enlil was silent as he stood up to leave, and Enki extended his arm to him. Let us lock arms as brothers, as comrades who together confronted challenges on an alien planet. So Enki did say to his brother Enlil. And Enlil, grasping his brother's arms, hugged him as well. Shall we meet again on Earth or on Nibiru? Enki asked. Was Galzu right that we die if we go to Nibiru? Enlil responded. Then he turned and departed. Alone, Enki was left. He was accompanied only by the thoughts of his heart. How it all began and how it thus far ended, he sat and pondered. Was it all destined, or was it fate by this and that decision fashioned? If heaven and earth cycles within cycles are regulated, what happened will occur again. Is the past the future? Will the Earthlings emulate the Anunnaki? Will the Earth relive Nibiru? It looks like we're going that way, doesn't it? All the government buildings, folks, all the power position of government are built as tribute to the temples of the gods. I mean, don't you see this now? Will he, the first to arrive, be the last to leave? Besieged by thoughts, Enki made a decision. To put all of the events and all of the decisions, starting with Nibiru to this day on Earth, in a record to be a guide for future generations to come. Let posterity at a time by destiny designated read the record. Well, guess what? Let posterity at a time by destiny designated. Well, guess when that is? That's right now, ladies and gentlemen. And the whole time I've been reading this. Let posterity at a time by destiny designated right now. Read the record. Remember the past. Understand the future is prophecy. Let the future of the past be the judge. These are the words of Enki, firstborn of Anu of Nibiru. The words of the Lord Enki, the 14th tablet, written from the mouth of the great Lord Enki. Not one word missed, not one word added, by the master scribe in Dubsar, a man of Eridu, son of Udbar. By the Lord Enki, with long life, I have been blessed. That means he's had his DNA changed, so he's now immortal. That's what that means. And that's it. That's it. That concludes our reading of the Lost Book of Enki. I'll be making a decision Pretty soon on what my next thing to read is going to be, and I'll let you know. We'll start that soon in an upcoming broadcast. Short show tonight. Well, I almost didn't do a show. There wasn't a lot of material, but amazing stuff there. Now that that's completed, people can make YouTube videos and spread that around. And I'm so glad we read that, and I plan on reading more of this stuff because I've learned a lot from it. Because I used to think Zachariah Sitchin was just a disinfo stooge. That's what I had been told. And that's what I believed. And he very much was somebody who was allowing his work to be seen as fiction intentionally, so that people wouldn't look at it in front of themselves by proxy, benefiting the elite and their agenda and everything else. And I'm sure they paid him well. I mean, you don't get a New York Times bestseller and not make a lot of money. That's just the fact of the matter. And he had several of them, and you don't get that unless you're serving the elite. So that's one thing I've learned for sure. I've learned more about what his role was to them. I've learned more about the fact that there's been a massive campaign to try and, you know, again, do the same thing people do to me. They try to attack me and attack my character and talk about what an asshole and a clown or whatever else I am. But yet they never bring anything to the table to combat the info. That's the same thing here. You know, it's the same thing they try to do me with the CMP info. They want to talk about me and my shortcomings and everything else instead of what we are all here to talk about. And that is the information. And if you take anything else away from this reading of this Zachariah Sitchin thing, take this, because again, you know, I don't endorse the guy's work or anything else. But the fact of the matter is, during the reading of this, I went back and have done more research into these tablets, found multiple, you know, scholarly translations, and they match Zachariah Sitchin translations almost word for word in every case. So, I mean, to me, there's just no, regardless of Zachariah Sitchin or not, there is no doubt. It's just irrefutable that this information has been given fictional status so they can fictionalize the truth. So when you tell somebody the truth seems like fiction. All science fiction has been created for that. So that when we hear the truth, we automatically, when we hear it and it's so outlandish to us, we automatically assume that it has to be fiction because the reference we have for that is Star Wars or sci-fi or comic books or something else. That's been the operation for years to come. And the one thing I've learned is that, you know, go to the source yourself and make up your own mind and make up your own decision. And that's what you should always do. Please support us if you can, folks, at theglobalreality.com. I'm tired of saying it. We do need help. Support us if you can. Help us reach that goal so we can push forward and kick the fourth year in its ass. My name is Josh Reeves. I love each and every one of you, and we'll see you next time for the show. You guys have a great one. Take care.